Welcome back, and we are coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. A woman in England suspects she may have snapped an image of a demon dog seemingly ready to pounce on an unsuspecting bystander. The eerie photograph was reportedly taken by Stephanie Smith while visiting Roundhay Park in the city of Leeds. Specifically, she was admiring a decorative castle built at the site in 1811 and long rumored to be home to a variety of spirits. One such phenomenon believed to lurk at the park, as well as a number of other similar locations in England, are demonic dogs known as Jytrash. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. As is often the case with these types of images, Smith insists there was no person nor animal in the area at the time the photo was taken that could account for the weird anomaly. As such, she expressed a remarkable degree of certainty about what she photographed, declaring it a demon dog stalking the castle in the grounds of Roundhay Park. Be that as it may, skeptical observers are apt to suggest the sinister canine is merely a trick of light and shadow coupled with local lore. What's your take on the possible demon dog? You can check out the image and the story in our highlights carousel, where webmaster Sean Latisor has posted that up at coasttocoastam.com. Your questions and comments for Susan B. Martinez, author of Field Guide to the Spirit World, next on Coast to Coast AM. Susan B. Martinez, a field guide to the spirit world, with a foreword by a gentleman who will be familiar to Coast listeners, Whitley Strieber. Pretty controversial stuff. Susan maintains that a whole host of pathological behaviors, including multiple personality, autism, epilepsy, even migraines, obsessive-compulsive disorder, depression, schizophrenia, self-destructive urges, all caused by spirit attachment. Now, before we get to the calls, Susan, something occurred to me as we were discussing serial killers and how they should be dealt with if, in fact, they are, I don't know if I want to use the word victims, but if their behavior is caused by a spirit attachment.
Yeah.
If like attracts like, what happens when you execute a serial killer?
That's exactly right. And we have, when there have been angelic transmissions, they have told us about that, that we can't just dump them in the spirit world. It's not doing us any good. In fact, it comes back in our face.
So what are we to do with them?
Well, we need a new approach. You know, the answer is not right in front of us, but a new way of thinking is required to get through these problems.
All right, I had one more before we get to the calls, and I want to circle back to some of these conditions or behaviors we were talking about earlier. Let's say, for example, schizophrenia.
Yes.
If it's a spirit attachment, why, in many instances, does some sort of a drug therapy seem to mask the symptoms? If it's a spirit attachment, one would expect the drugs not to work.
No, not necessarily. They may be antithetical to that spirit. That's why shock therapy works. It's very painful for the spirit. The corporeal body doesn't feel it. They only feel a mild shock. But it's a terrible experience for the impinging spirit, and it makes them run away. Of course, they come back when the shocking is done. But there's no telling. This thing requires a study of its own, but there are effects that we don't know about. There are some medicines that would affect the spirit positively and others that wouldn't. One thing that makes it very clear that the alters are coming from different personalities in the spirit world is the business of symptoms and going into remission with an illness. Something I started noticing, this pattern of remission of coming and going, these different symptoms belong to different personalities that are overshadowing and who come and go in our aura.
All right, let's go to the phones. On the wild card line, Jody is checking in from New York. Jody, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you for taking my call. Richard, I've always wanted to also tell you that I really enjoy your introduction of there are stories to be told and you are among friends. It's always really nice. The whole introduction is really good.
Why, thank you for
thank
that.
Thank you. So, Susan, I called in because I really... I wanted to support you and give you positive feedback and tell you a few things. I think the work that you're doing is really wonderful. George Norrie just had somebody on Coast to Coast, I would say March, maybe February, and I'm really sorry I don't recall his name, but he was a psychotherapist, and he's put together an organization, and it's called something like, you know, the Organization of Psychotherapists, something like that, and they're all doing spirit release work because they've all discovered that they can't heal their clients without releasing all the entities that these people who come to them for therapy are full of. And I'm sure that if you look through the Coast to Coast list of former talks, you'll find him. It was very recent. And so, you know, he's doing the same work that you're doing.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah. Is there any way of finding out his name?
Yeah,
I can I can look that up for you, Susan, and email that to you, unless you want to go to coasttocoastam.com and you can go through the past shows. But I'd be happy to do that and send you the name.
That's important because that's the next step we need to take. We need to get organized in the spirit release work. There are very few people doing it.
All right, east of the Rockies, and we go to John in Oak Grove, Missouri. John, welcome to Coast.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy your show. First thing I want to say, I want to apologize for my voice. I'm recovering from pneumonia. I have two comments. The first one is about psychiatry. Psychiatry, the fact is, they do not cure the problem, they medicate the problem. My second comment is, you made a comment, ma'am, that spirits have no conscience. I have to differ with you.
No, quite the opposite, John. Let me just step in here because that's the exact opposite of what she said.
Okay, well, I took it that she said they had no conscience. If they have no conscience, then there is no heaven and there is no hell.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said conscious, as in consciousness. I don't know that she said anything about having a conscience. Susan, jump in here.
I don't know what I'm jumping into.
Okay. No. Good point. It's a good question, John. Let me just ask Susan. Do spirits have a conscience?
It's kind of hard to answer. Did you ever notice how similar the words conscience and conscious are? You know, conscious and conscience.
Yes.
They're very
yes.
similar. And I can say with certainty that spirits have consciousness. The whole question of conscience comes down to morals and ethics. And this is something that, yes, carries over from this life to the next. But I'd like to know what the context of this discussion is.
All right, John, do you want to expound on your question?
Let me say this, that if you want a spirit guide, a guide to the spirit world, I suggest, man, you read the NIV or the King James Version, okay?
All right, so he's laying some Bible verses on you or basically saying that, I'm guessing, John, not to put words in your mouth, that this is demonic.
What I'm saying, Jesus Christ said himself and cast out demons. If you really want to know about the spirit world, I suggest you read the King James or the NI version. You know, I really believe, ma'am, that
government, evil, dark entity, spirit group that is, you know, attacking us.
And well, Linda, you raise an interesting point here, and Susan, that is that there are I get letters and emails from people probably every month, without fail, who believe that they are hearing voices in their skull that are being, you know, directed at them through some sort of microwave technology, that they are victims of mind control. Is it possible then that these mind control victims, so-called, are actually victims of a spirit attachment? Or is it possible that both are happening?
Absolutely. The first, the spirit attachment, it's really shows you how common it is, but we don't have the confidence to interpret it properly.
However,
the comment that the lady in Washington made, I have to say there's a lot of truth in that.
The mind control?
Yeah, mind control, government, all of it. It's
right.
All tied in, and there's a very huge subject matter here.
Right, because we know the technology exists, for example, for someone remotely to put a voice into somebody's skull at a distance. Voice-to-skull technology has been around for almost 50 years. So these things exist, so it's possible that in some cases we have a spirit attachment, but in other cases, the manipulation of the mind and the emotions and so forth is actually mind control perpetrated by a living, breathing human being.
You know, there's room for that theory, and there's a lot of truth in it. But but to me, the thing that you need to tackle first is the propaganda that has come down in our accepted sciences, in the received wisdom, in the academia, where only so much is accepted and the rest is rejected. The almost all of us, you know, if my book has launched an attack on psychiatry or psychology the way we're handling it nowadays, it's only a small part of the picture. Every science, every field of study is infected by the scientific materialism and is off course.
Now, something that occurs to me is when we pass on, many of us have this perception that somehow crossing that veil gives us some sort of enlightenment, omnipresence, an omniscience. And yet, if that were the case, why are we still sort of hanging around, glomming on to other people and causing mischief? Doesn't sound like an enlightened soul to me.
Well, that's a good point, Richard, because when we pass on, we don't change at all. We are exactly ourselves. What kind of magic bullet do people imagine? We cross over as ourselves, and we go right to the place that we are destined for by the patterns of our mind, by what we have accepted, and by the choices we have made. We are who we are. We don't change one jot or tittle.
Let's say hi to Sheldon, east of the Rockies in Wisconsin. Sheldon, good evening, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. I had a question. I was wondering if there was any link to all them spirits and spooks being tied up with substance abusers. Myself, I'm an alcoholic. I got gooped up in the sauce, and sometimes I kind of feel like there's a little something extra there, you know, pushing me towards it, other than just, you know, your basic addiction and all that. So, just
great question, Sheldon. All right, Susan, addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction.
Absolutely. You know, that's what makes it, we come back again to the word vulnerable, and that is one of the conditions that makes us particularly vulnerable. And if Sheldon wants to find out more about it, I would say that Dr. Edith Fior is the one who zeroed in on alcoholism and spirits. I think the name of her classic work is The Unquiet Dead by Dr. Edith Fiore.
All right, The Unquiet Dead by Edith Fiore. We've just got about 2 minutes here to the bottom of the hour, and then we'll go into a break, come back, and more conversation, more calls. But let me ask you about the importance of a sudden and violent death and spirit attachment.
Right. I became familiar with that when I was studying the writings on reincarnation in order to disprove it. I've been an anti-reincarnationist all along, and I feel very strongly against that theory because it teaches, it's anti-spiritualism. It's not spiritualism, which people tend to think it is. It's anti-spirit because spiritualism is all about moving on and moving into the light of heaven. And reincarnation is all about coming back to materialism. But okay, let's see. You asked about sudden death. Okay, that became my major weapon against reincarnation when I studied the cases of so-called past lives. It turned out, in my opinion, to be spirits, lost and wandering spirits who had died suddenly and violently.
All right. I want to definitely pick up on a few of those threads regarding reincarnation. That's a fascinating, a couple of fascinating points you made about reincarnation. We'll come back to that, take some more calls. Susan Martinez stays with us, the field guide to the spirit world. And say hello on Twitter, at Richard Serrett. A team of scientists, some of whom have worked for Elon Musk, outlined a way to rapidly implant electrical wiring into the brains of rats. The process, described in an unpublished academic paper, is an important step toward a potential system to plug human brains directly into computers. A team of scientists, some of whom have worked, the paper's five authors, have been employed by or loosely associated with Neuralink, a small and secretive brain computing startup founded by Musk, according to people familiar with their work and public information. The authors dub their system a sewing machine for the brain. It involves scientists in a laboratory removing a piece of a rat's skull and inserting a single needle that sends flexible electrodes into brain tissue. The researchers are soliciting feedback on their work before submitting it for peer review and publication in a scientific journal. The authors and a spokesman for Neuralink either declined to comment or didn't respond to requests. But you can read the entire article up at the coasttocoastam.com website in the news section, where our webmaster, Sean Latasseur, has posted that. Susan, I wanted to circle back to something you said prior to the break about reincarnation, and that you do not believe in reincarnation, and nor do I. But I have, in all honesty, I've witnessed a number of past life regressions, and the people that are being regressed seem absolutely genuine that they are having some sort of a past life memory, and I'm wondering, Is that some sort of a trick being perpetrated by a spirit attachment, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I like the way you put it. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. These careers were lived by people who are now in spirit, who are overshadowing the person who has become convinced of past life. It's not possible to reincarnate, but people try, and that's what overshadowing is.
So in other words, they're not remembering their own previous life, they are recounting the past life of the spirit that has glommed onto them.
Yeah, they're channeling that spirit, and they don't identify it as such.
All right, let's go to the wild card line. Chris is in Jonesboro, Tennessee. Chris, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Sure. Ma'am, I just wanted to ask you, one thing that's been bothering me, when I first came on, I heard you talk about a lot of mental illness and how you establish spiritual attachment to these mental illnesses. I myself am a 100% disabled veteran of the Iraqi war. I have been diagnosed with a laundry list of mental health problems and mental health disorders. How come you've never, in the entire time you've been on the air, how come you haven't talked about the fact that people's experiences can dictate these things? And it's the oldest story that was ever told, ma'am. It's just good versus evil. It's God versus the devil. It's black and white. And that's all I have. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
I'm sorry, I don't get what the question is.
Well, Chris, did you want to restate it, or shall I rephrase for you? Are you there, Chris?
Yes, sir. You can try if you don't.
All right. Let me have a whack at it, Chris, if I'm understanding you. So you've seen action in Iraq. You've obviously been traumatized. You have, as you say, a litany of mental health issues as a result of your service. And by the way, thank you for your service. So Chris seems to be suggesting it's his experiences on the battlefield that have caused these, the trauma from being on the battlefield, seeing action, that's causing his underlying mental health issues, not some sort of a spirit attachment. Is that, have I got it, Chris?
Much, but I also want to reiterate that I am a devout Christian, and I know exactly where I go when I die, and I know who's going to be there when I get there. So it's not an issue of, you know, like spirituality, or they can't touch me, because the name of Jesus Christ keeps them from touching me. And there is no attachment or no spirit that dictates my mental illness. I think sometimes, I really don't want to be hostile, but I feel like it's kind of ignorant, some of the things you've been saying, ma'am.
Well, hang on now, Chris. There is some common ground here. I mean, you may not necessarily see eye to eye on everything, but you both believe in a spirit world. Susan also believes in demonic entities, which can impact. And as a Bible-believing Christian, you would also have to agree that we can be manipulated and affected by demons. So there is some agreement here. Susan?
Yes, that's right.
All right. I think that's about as far as we'll go with that one. Thank you, Chris, for the call. And again, thank you for your service. Lonnie is in Whiting, New Jersey. Is it Whiting or Whiting, Lonnie?
Whiting.
Well, welcome to Coast. Thank you. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. You know, I've been listening to all these conversations. First of all, I agree that there is no such thing as reincarnation, and I can tell you exactly why. The scriptures teach that there's no such thing as reincarnation. If you look at the story of the rich man and Lazarus, it says it right there. The rich man wanted Lazarus to go back and talk to his brothers, and God said no.
Right. Well, Lonnie, I happen to agree with you, but that's what we call arguing from authority. And that doesn't, I mean, if you're not a Bible-believing Christian, that means nothing. I mean, I am, but what I'm saying is you can't say this is true because of this, because it's written here, right? However, so you and Susan obviously agree there is no such thing as reincarnation. But Susan, let me just delve into that a little bit further. And why do you think, our faith filters put aside for a moment, why is it not possible to reincarnate?
Are you asking me, Richard?
Yes. Yes, Susan.
Because we're given one life. And we move on to a different kind of life in the heaven world. You can try to reincarnate, and in doing so, you would inhabit someone else's body.
Okay. All right. East of the Rockies?
Which would be possession.
Possession, right. That's as close as we can come to reincarnation, is to attach ourselves to another living human.
Right.
All right, east of the Rockies, Sheldon is in Wisconsin. Sheldon, good morning. Oh, we lost Sheldon. Okay,
let's go Sheldon.
We did Sheldon. My apologies. Let's say hi to Joe in Long Island. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, hi Susan. How you doing? My question would be more your research on angels. Their presence, are they automatically present? Can you request their help? Can you interact with them?
Yeah, you can. In fact, Right now, I'm working on something a little different. I'm compiling prayers from around the world, and that is something that gets into the angel presence. And yes, you can attract good angels, or you can attract dark angels, and it all depends on your own behavior and your own choices.
All right. Now, I don't know if my call screener is refreshing properly, but is Debbie there from Northern California? All right. Hi, Debbie. Welcome aboard. You're on the line with Susan Martinez.
Wow. I'm glad to be talking to you guys. I never thought I'd... Well, actually, I kind of tried. I believed. Lately, I just believe, and things are happening positive. And like, it's something so negative, and then it's so positive that the devil kind of... He confounds people and will keep them in bondage by believing something. And if you get those words over in the Bible, they'll shed light, but you keep at it until you can see just a glimpse of light. Like with me, it'll just flash. Like maybe I'll start at the beginning of the day praying, because I know that if I keep that spirit over me, that it's light, and at the end of the day, my blessings will come like in a flash. Like that, every single day since the year about 2000, this has been happening to me, but I got to seek him. My question is, I guess I deal with a person that has schizophrenia, and I've dealt with them for years and years and years, and I guess it kind of keeps me in bondage, and that's kind of my hell lately, is if this person, I really appreciate for... Susan, to get on there and say this, because, yeah, this person won't address the fact that maybe there is a demonic spirit on them or something. And so that's how he's got them. And I don't know how to, you know, get through it, because he puts me through so much, and this person's really intelligent and everything. But, boy, I mean, I pray and pray and pray, but I guess I don't know how... What's the answer to, you know, like keeping, like they let a demonic spirit in when they were young or something by trauma, like maybe somebody attacked them or stuff like that, and they couldn't deal with it. And that's the best explanation I have ever heard, that they just for an instant, like they don't want to be there, and that spirit comes in. That would that be like hypnotism too? I mean...
Yeah, that's part of it.
All right, Debbie, I'm. Thank you for your call, Susan. I mean, what do we say to someone like Debbie who's really struggling with a loved one who has schizophrenia? I mean, to suggest that their problem can be resolved with an exorcism or a spirit release?
Yeah. We have to go in a new direction with this, and. I should mention that I am of the belief that mental health problems are increasing and accelerating right now, because we're in a transition time. We're moving into a new epoch in the life of man in which we will come to terms with our spiritual selves. But in the transition, a lot of negative stuff from the past is being rehashed, and the heavens are just loaded with negative spirits. The heavens need to be cleared. All of this is going to happen to a significant degree within the next 30 years. But I'm saying that there is a lot of mental breakdown right now, and so there's this desperation. What can we do? My book doesn't list people and organizations and whatnot who heal these problems. We're not there yet. But one of your listeners did mention that there were a group of therapists on your show a few months ago, and they are going in that direction. So that's something to bring forward and work with. I have as a result of the book, I have already had someone contact me with a son who's schizophrenic, a soldier returned from Iraq, and we, in my group, there is one very good healer, and he took the case, but it's not happening yet, and it has to start happening, and I would appreciate the feedback from you and your people who have that list of therapists who are doing this.
Right, spirit release therapy. In fact, I've talked to someone from England as well who is engaged in spirit release therapy.
Was it Sue Allen or
No, Wilma, this was a,
Wilma Davidson?
No, this was a gentleman, and of course his name escapes my rapidly aging brain at the moment. But
that's okay. There's a bit of this going on in UK, but we're here.
Right, right. Well, they have a longer tradition of the spiritualist movement, I suppose. But, you know, I don't want people to have false hope. On the other hand, if it's conducted in a way that is not intrusive, you know, when I think of an exorcism, I mean, I can hear people saying, oh, here we go back to the Middle Ages, exorcising all of these things that have, you know, underlying mental illnesses.
We have to take our steps. We have to see what our forebears did to handle these problems. We
yes.
have to become familiar. That's the first step in the road to recovery, to become, to educate ourselves in what has been done in the past. Someone who I went to school with, his name is Vincent Crapanzano. He made a anthropological study of exorcisms and cults of this nature, and it's in a book that he wrote with, that he edited with Vivian Garrison, and it's called Case Studies in Spirit Possession. And that goes back to 1977. But it's a wonderful start. There is stuff out there. We need to become educated. We're spinning our wheels with Simac.
Let's see if we can squeeze in. Let's see. Linda's in Windsor, Ontario. Linda on the wildcard line, welcome.
Hi. I'm going to do this quickly, but I disagree with the two of you. I know the Bible is full of scriptures of reincarnation. I, myself as a child, without any spiritual connotations there, I had a revealing. I knew that I was on this earth before, and I was very young. And I still remember the revealing, and it was like a veil being pulled away. There's not the reincarnation of the body, but reincarnation of the soul. And Revelations, for one, sticks out with me. He said, Christ said that you do as God asked you to do, I will send you out no more. And that is the birth and the rebirth cycle. Now, there's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of unknowledged. I've researched this and studied around the 400 AD. They took reincarnation out, which was one of the strong teaching pillars of the Christian faith. And the reasons, I guess there's many, but it was taken because of they wanted the church to have more power than, say, the individual. Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that, Linda. I mean, I've read accounts and I've read Christian apologists who have discounted that the conference at Hippo or Carthage or whatever.
Well,
that's one woman's opinion, and that's fair. But Linda, I've got to scoot. We're out of time. Susan, thank you so much. This has been delightful. Field Guide to the Spirit World. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, Lyle Blackburn is a legend hunter, and we are going to delve into, this happened back in the summer of 1972. A tall, faceless, hairy, three-toed creature that terrorized the town of Louisiana, Missouri. And we'll get all the details in just moments. Here's Sam and Dave. Bring it on home to me on Coast to Coast AM.